This is a podcast from WILL AM 580. To support our station, please visit www.willpledge.org. That's www.willpledge.org.
This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Friday, July 20th. I'm Tom Rogers. Coming up, a local effort to build the house of the future as far as energy consumption goes. We'll also get our forecast for the weekend from AM 580's Mike Sola. First, a look at today's news. A second confirmed case of meningitis in Vermilion County has authorities looking for connections between the two cases and evidence of any more cases. Tests came back Wednesday confirming that bacterial meningitis killed a 3-year-old girl from Westville who fell ill nearly 2 weeks ago. They also revealed that a second child under the age of 4 who's hospitalized in Urbana also has the disease. Vermilion County Health Administrator Steve Laker says there are certain criteria that must be met before health experts decide to call for a vaccination program.
And that's 3 cases confirmed with the same serogroup within a 3-month period of time, and that you can build some definition of risk. For example, you might say, under a certain age.
Yesterday afternoon, more testing failed to come up with a serogroup or specific group of antigens for the fatal meningitis case that may make it tougher to find a link between the two confirmed cases. Meningitis is a contagious disease that inflames the lining of the brain and spinal cord. Laker says they found no common sources of exposure between the two children who lived 7 to 8 miles apart from each other. A coroner's jury is backing up previous findings that a Champaign County jail inmate died from natural causes. The jury's findings come in the case of an Urbana woman who died while under arrest for aggravated domestic battery. AM 580's Jim Meadows has more.
A Champaign County coroner's jury ruled at an inquest on Thursday that 33-year-old Janet Hahn of Urbana died last month due to complications from diabetes. Coroner Dwayne Northrup says the jury's findings back up previous findings of an inquest and toxicology tests.
If she had been a person that had been found at home and this had been determined to be the cause of death, we would not have inquested it. But we felt at this time that it was in the public interest and, you know, due to other circumstances that we should just take this to inquest and that way have a public hearing and the jury could decide the manner.
Northrup says those other circumstances are the 5 previous inmate deaths in the Champaign County jail system in the past 3 years, 3 of them by suicide. In Hahn's case, Northrup says a state police investigation found that jail officials tried to treat Hahn for diabetes and checked up on her every quarter hour. But he says Hahn was uncooperative, would not authorize release of her medical records, and did not always submit to blood tests. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
Champaign County Sheriff Dan Walsh declined comment yesterday, saying he had not read the report from the coroner's jury. School clubs, sports teams, and PTAs often hold bake sales to raise money for things like field trips or uniforms. An education advocacy group had a bake sale yesterday in the rotunda of the State Capitol building in hopes of raising billions of dollars for their cause. Amanda Vinicky has more.
At this bake sale, there were no bargains. The cookies were priced at $2 billion each. Cupcakes cost $500 million. And how about $498 million for a brownie? It's no surprise that no one actually bought anything, but members of A-Plus Illinois say that wasn't the point. The baked goods were symbols, meant to show legislators how much additional money the education advocates believe schools need from the state. Marcus Smith, an 18-year-old who just graduated from King College Prep in Chicago, says he's interning with the group because he believes the disparity between schools in rich and poor districts is unfair.
And unfortunately, I went to a well-funded school, but it's not fair that other students couldn't have the same education or the same resources I have.
It's A-Plus Illinois' position that the best way to solve this problem is to raise the state income tax, something Governor Rod Blagojevich is ardently opposed to. Smith says he and some other students wanted the governor to know their position, so they went up the stairs to his office and tried to deliver a tray of some leftover sweets. But Smith says a man refused to let them in.
And we were actually stopped at the door. We weren't allowed to actually walk into the governor's office. And we asked, can we speak to the governor, see the governor, or give him something? He said no. And I was like, are you positive? We're just, you was trying to give him some baked goods for free. It's not coming out of his pocket. And they were like, oh, I'm positive, definitely. So it was kind of a negative effect of how to view the government.
Perhaps a lesson in politics, and one that couldn't be taught in the classroom. Eventually, Smith says, the guard agreed to leave a cookie and a muffin with Blagojevich's secretary. The governor's office did not return calls for comment. I'm Amanda Vinicky.
Illinois U.S. Senator Dick Durbin's re-election campaign raised more than $2.4 million between April and June of this year. That's not a lot compared to top presidential campaigns, but as Sam Hudzik reports, it's an impressive tally for a Senate race.
About half a million of the total came from political action committees, the rest from individuals. That gives the campaign more than $6 million in the bank, with more than a year to go before the 2008 election. Nathan Gonzalez is political editor of the Rothenberg Political Report.
Those are great fundraising numbers for a senator who may have a re-election race. They're even better fundraising numbers for a senator who isn't likely to have much of a race at all.
Gonzalez counts Durbin in that second category, even though the senator faces some half a dozen Republican challengers. A spokesman for the Illinois Republican Party says Durbin's fundraising totals show he's more interested in raising money than working for Illinois residents. I'm Sam Hudzik.
A house that was once threatened with demolition is now part of a prestigious group of homes with historical significance. The National Park Service has added the so-called Solon House near downtown Champaign to the National Register of Historic Places. The stately home next door to Edison Middle School is one of the last remaining Italianate structures in the city. It was built in 1867. 2 years ago, the Preservation and Conservation Association took ownership of the vacant home from the heirs of Francis and Abby Solon. It's had few improvements since its construction. The association hopes to restore the house. For the latest newscast online, go to will.uiuc.edu/news. This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. I'm Tom Rogers. In this week's Environmental Almanac, the House of the Future. Rob Cantor has the details.
Imagine life in a house that takes care of itself. No, not a house that picks up after you. One that harnesses the power of the sun to generate electricity. All of the energy you need for heating and cooling, hot water, lighting, and appliances. Then go a step further and imagine that your house collects enough extra solar energy to power a small electric car for commuting to work or running errands around town. For a group of imaginative faculty and students at the University of Illinois, such a house is not a pipe dream, but rather a concrete, near-term goal. They're in the final stages of constructing a 3-room modular house that is entirely self-sustaining. The house will serve as the U of I's entry in the Solar Decathlon, a competition sponsored by the U.S. Department of Energy. The competition brings together 20 college teams from around the world in a contest to design, build, and operate the most livable, energy-efficient, completely solar-powered house. Teams will transport their entries to the National Mall in Washington, D.C. this October. There, they will be judged on how well they meet demands for energy, as well as their architectural integrity and aesthetic appeal. The U of I's entry into the Solar Decathlon has benefited from the involvement of more than a dozen faculty members who have donated their time and expertise to the project. In addition, more than 150 undergraduate students in disciplines that include industrial design, engineering, architecture, and computer science have played a role in the creation of the house. Teams competing in the Solar Decathlon will earn points by performing the tasks of everyday life in their houses, cooking, washing dishes, and doing laundry, as well as running a computer and television. Beyond that, they must also store enough of the power generated by the house to operate their electric car. The most practical way to create a house that can meet all of its energy needs with solar power is to reduce the demand for energy through conservation. Thus, the walls of the U of I team's solar house boast 4 times the insulation value of the current standard for home construction. The windows far exceed current standards, too. They're specially designed to let in light and provide a view, but they are relatively small and oriented to decrease undesirable warming in the summer. The solar house generates electricity by means of commercially produced solar panels mounted above the roof. Over the lifetime of the panels, the cost for the electricity they provide will be about the same as if it were purchased from a utility. The energy cost of running the electric vehicle using solar power actually works out to be less than that of a gasoline-powered vehicle. In speaking about the U of I solar house, Ty Newell, a professor of mechanical engineering and one of many faculty members who has helped to move the project forward, emphasizes that the solar decathlon is not about far-out technology. Instead, he says, it's meant to be a display to people that being comfortable and conserving energy aren't two different things, that we can build a house that requires only 10% of the energy a typical house today requires, build it with today's technologies, and show that it saves money. I would add that such a display reminds us we have it within our grasp to meet the challenges of rising energy costs and global warming, if we are willing to adjust our priorities.
Rob Cantor is a writer with the University of Illinois Environmental Council. To find out more about Environmental Almanac or listen to it again, follow the links on our website at will.uiuc.edu, and you can read the Environmental Almanac on Sundays in the News Gazette. Support for Environmental Almanac is provided by the U of I College of Architecture. There is no mention of rain in our forecast for the first time in, well, maybe about a week. Mike Sola says today will be mostly sunny throughout the two-state area and highs much milder than we've seen as well, from 72 in northern Indiana to 84 in far southern Illinois. Clear skies tonight, the lows from 50 in northeast Indiana to 58 in southwest Illinois. For tomorrow, sunshine and 73 near Lake Michigan, 86 in the far south. Sunny on Sunday, with highs ranging from 77 in northern Indiana to 86 degrees in southern Illinois. This has been the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Friday, July 20th. You can find podcasts of Focus 580, The Afternoon Magazine, agricultural programming, and other information on our website, will.uiuc.edu. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.